Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Podcast One presents. This is a collect call from Sing Sing.
My name is John J. Lennon. I'm locked up for selling drugs and committing murder. I'm also a contributor for Esquire magazine and the Marshall Project. So I'm a writer and I'm a prisoner. Imagine trying to stay focused and talk about issues of substance with gates slamming, prisoners screaming, and PAs blaring in the background.
Get new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. My guest is Derek Bodner of The Athletic, specifically The Athletic Philadelphia, and I wanted to have him on to talk about the Sixers when I was kind of thinking about this unusual structure of this hiatus and the team that had kind of the most on the line right now other than the championship contenders. It is the Sixers because there's so much to evaluate and they have a lot of important decisions to make, and Derek is the perfect person to talk to about that. So we go through a lot of different things. We even game out a little bit of a potential playoff series with the Celtics, and really enjoyed the conversation. Runs a little bit less than an hour. Brought to you by Bet Online. Use that Podcast One promo code to tell them you came from us and to get a special sign-up bonus, which is great. And hope you really enjoy the episode. Lots of great stuff in here. Thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Once we got the 2 to 4 week kind of tentative timetable, I started thinking a little bit more from a team perspective and realized that you and I hadn't talked in a while. And part of why I wanted to talk to you specifically is the Sixers, we always knew this was going to be a fascinating and important and challenging season for them with, you know, the overhaul that happened last year in the offseason. And I just started thinking, I need to ask Derek Bodner about how the hell this is going to go for this franchise when so much was about evaluating how the 2019-20 season went.
Yeah, the Sixers have always been an interesting team for the longest time because nothing is ever normal with this group. And you're right, I think this was a lot of people looked at this year as this is when you can sort of get the normalcy because they changed like their starting lineup 2 out of 5 spots every year pretty much. To a T. They had Covington and Sharich the first year with Embiid and Simmons. Then they had Redick and Jimmy Butler last year, who are no longer with the Sixers. And now you've got this current group with Josh Richardson and Al Horford. There's been so much change, and they got these guys locked into these long-term contracts. They pretty much ate up all of their flexibility. So I think you're right. This was the year where you were supposed to start seeing, like, how is this going to look when it all came together?
And then you had kind of the competing different things of the challenges with integrating Al Horford kind of from a couple different perspectives. And then before all of this happened, Ben Simmons' back injury. And then, so it's like, oh God, are we even going to get to see the Sixers? And then it becomes, are we even going to get a season? Or are we even going to get a playoff? So we talked, from what I recall, we did a little bit on the Horford situation before, though I do want to get to that. But I want to start with Ben Simmons. Do we know any more, or is this just kind of because of the COVID situation, we just haven't been getting full information?
Yeah, I mean, Elton Brand had a conference call not too long ago, a week or two ago, where, you know, he said that they were confident in the progress he was made and that they feel like when the season is brought back up, he will be able to play. They say they can't say that definitively because obviously they haven't seen him go in a practice, in a 5-on-5, see how the back responds. But the word has been that it has recovered pretty well.
That's great. Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, if the season does resume, that's a huge benefit for the Sixers for sure.
Yeah. And it gets into, I mean, there was Nate and I, when we were doing mailbags and stuff in the early days of this shelter in place pandemic, we were getting questions about like who could theoretically benefit and who would be hurt by this. And the one we always said was the biggest question mark was the Sixers, because they need to get a lot of information this year. But if they can have Simmons for a higher proportion of the remaining season, that would definitely be a good thing.
Yes, it would. There's always, you know, we talk about that a lot too, and it's always, okay, well, you get Simmons back, that's great, but now what does Embiid look like with all this time off? And that's right. Sort of like the potential, you know, canceling effect, but we'll see.
And also the intense, should we be lucky enough to have, let's call it a playoffs, like I my general assumption is that we won't really get much of any of a regular season. Maybe something will be called that, but it won't really be that. And now that puts so much concentration on an intensely small sample size that is almost guaranteed to be entirely non-representative.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's so much like how well have you kept yourself in shape? How quickly? I mean, I just remember going back to the strike-shortened season.
Yeah.
And the first half of that season just seemed weird. Like, the results were weird. The play was weird. It was sloppy. And it's because you had to just ramp up so quickly. And in a blink of an eye, you were in playoff mode. And this is going to be even more condensed and more weird. And yeah, I don't expect, you know, I hate to say, like, there will be an asterisk, because I don't, like, there shouldn't be an asterisk. But it will be different. Like, it will be a completely unreplicable situation that will introduce new variables that we're just not used to. And trying to predict that right now seems almost impossible.
Well, and not only trying to predict it, but trying to extrapolate meaning from it is a really challenging endeavor. And the Sixers, so there are a bunch of different ways that you could think of this small sample size evaluation being challenging. And I would say the most perilous would be the one where you have a lot of flexibility, where teams are trying to think of this period of time. I mean, you could draw the parallel, though they didn't have this much flexibility, of like the Blazers taking last year's Western Conference Finals appearance as an indication that they were one of the two best teams in the Western Conference, and giving Lillard and CJ McCollum those huge contracts. And I guess you could say that was flexibility because they had the ability to sign those contracts even if it wasn't with cap space. And that's the most daunting, is when teams have a lot, they have a lot to evaluate and do it. But the other side of that is when you don't have a lot of flexibility, but you're right in your window and every decision you make is exceedingly important. And that's really the vein that I see the Sixers in.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have these two really unique players, a post-up center in a league that's pretty much completely abandoned the post-up, and a non-shooting point guard in a league that values shooting so heavily. And they have to try to figure out a way to make this work. And this year they went pretty much all in on size and defense and really not having a defender you can pick apart, at least in the starting lineup. And they're trying to see whether or not that can work, not only in an 82-game regular season, but whether that can work in a playoff environment where things change, where the sport is different. And you need to, first of all, that's a risky decision to build around, because we've seen the clunkiness of the offense play out night in and night out. But if that is your premise, that the playoffs are what matter, and this is a team we think that is specifically purposefully built for the playoffs, you want those playoffs to be as normal and as representative as possible, both because you want to see whether or not you need to blow this up and try to rebuild some other way. Not rebuild, but build around your two stars some other way. But also because if it works, or quote-unquote works to a reasonable degree, even if it doesn't yield a championship, you need to know whether or not this is a strategy to double down on and continue pursuing. And it is going to be different, for sure.
Right. And the other exacerbating factor, part of why I wasn't as enthusiastic about this, you know, theoretical stoppage being as good for the Sixers, is if this ends up being a situation where the regular season is halted, and if there are playoffs, which I'd be thrilled about, but they were built on the season as it ended, Philadelphia would be the 6th seed, not the 5. And that means they would be playing the Celtics in the first round. So it's not even a circumstance where, should that come to pass, where they have time to figure this out. It's not like they have and there would have been challenges facing the Heat in the first round. It looked for a while like that was the destined 4-5. I even did a thing about how I thought that was the single most likely series because of the uncertainty with the 7-8. And that might end up being completely wrong. But Boston, you know, get right into the cauldron, because it's a best of 7 if it's a best of 7, and they're a very, very good team.
They are. And the Sixers have had a pretty good degree of success against the Celtics this year. You know, I do think the Sixers, I think Boston has been the clearly better, more consistent team. I think the Sixers have some aspects where they're a struggle for Boston to match up with. And by some aspects, I mean Joel Embiid. And I think it would be interesting to see that play out. But yeah, I mean, look, I think if you were looking at it, you would want the Heat in the first round. You know, I think they're tied with the Pacers right now at 5-6. So even if you get a little bit of a end of the regular season, that could change pretty easily. But yeah, I mean, it playing the and I mean, look, the home road thing is clearly not going to be what it was. And in some respects, the Sixers lucked out a little bit, because your typical, you've got these teams like the Celtics who have worked so hard and been so consistent all year long, and you want to reward that with the home playoff series. And the Sixers are sort of like your over-talented number 6 seed. So in one way, that benefits them, because they don't lose home court advantage, but also they have that ridiculous home road splits where you now don't get the benefit of the 29-2 record you've built at the Wells Fargo Center. So that will be interesting. But yeah, I mean, it's Boston is not the ideal matchup for round one, but it would be an interesting series.
It would be, and you'd have also the elements of Al Horford playing against his former team, but also Horford's place within that series, because Boston, they use a lot of more smaller forward-sized guys rather than bigs. They don't lean on them. You know, Tice is an important part of the offense. They can use Kanter at times, but they don't do some of the same things that would make that it'll be a challenge for Philadelphia's big men, though their overall positional size would be massive.
Yeah. No, it would be fun to watch play out. And I mean, Ben Simmons has had a couple of really big, you know, Simmons has sort of been like the Sixers' Achilles heel when they met them in the playoffs 2 years ago, because of his limitations offensively and how Stevens was able to capitalize on that. But so far this season, he's played exceptional defense against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on the perimeter. And it would be fun to see him step up in a series like that. You know, I think one thing that sort of got lost in the playoffs last year was how much Simmons stepped up defensively. First on D'Angelo Russell in the first round, and then, and this is going to sound ridiculous to say, but Kawhi Leonard in the second round, even though Kawhi made every shot imaginable, they were well-contested shots. Yeah. They were shots that you would, quote-unquote, want him to take. Sometimes great offensive players just aren't going to be stopped, and Kawhi was in that zone. But I think Simmons had a real good defensive postseason run last year, and I think this is a series where his defense would factor in huge as well.
Right, and it would, and especially when you factor in the growth that Tatum was showing kind of heading into the hiatus, like that would have been a really fun test for both of those guys, because Simmons would have been guarding ideally a different Jason Tatum than they have seen over the last little while, though how much of that would have held, you know, like would all the crazy step backs have been going in at the rate that they were in February, we won't know for a while. But yeah, it is a lot. And then the other just elephant in the room, and I think about this in the context of the Washington Wizards, because they were a recent team that did this, where it is much easier for an ownership group to make commitments to spend in the abstract than when there's a passage of time between when they make the commitments to spend and then when they actually have to. And so in the Wizards' case, that was, I wrote a piece about this for The Athletic a few years ago, when they signed John Wall to the Supermax and gave Bradley Beal and Otto Porter, matched on Porter and then signed Beal, all to max contracts. But it was another couple of years until they all kicked in. And so what happens then is, you know, it's a lot easier to say yes than to actually start signing those checks. And so with the Sixers, that's really going to start kicking in for the 20/21 season. And so you have that part of why, you know, we always thought the rubber was going to meet the road this year, because it's the inflection and evaluation point before that, even if they already committed to the salaries. But then now that might be getting the additional complication that the Sixers, Warriors, and Nets are feeling most prominently, which is that if there is an adjustment off of the official projections for next season, already locked in contracts are the least likely thing to be affected. So that it's just going to go straight at their bottom line.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a really good point that, like, planning to pay the tax and then actually paying the tax a year or two down the road are completely different things. And now you've got the uncertainty. You know, I saw one projection, I think this was from Bobby Marks, where the luxury tax could drop from, what was it, $139 million to, like, $115 million threshold. And obviously you would hope that that would mean there would be a lot of things that would change in terms of how that's calculated or what have you. But if that held, and the Sixers right now would probably end up, make a couple assumptions, right in like the $152 million range in terms of salary for next year is what I was factoring. So that luxury tax bill could jump from like $23, $24 million to like $130 million or something in that range. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I ran them within the last couple of days. You're talking about a huge growth. So it's not only like, okay, we were planning on paying the tax and now we actually have to, and that's a tough pill to swallow, especially if maybe this team underperforms, but also that tax bill could be wildly different than the one we were planning anyway. And this whole, you know, there's so many real world consequences to the coronavirus pandemic that it feels weird talking about it, but like this, how they manage the cap and how they manage, you know, everything that's going to go into team building over not only just next year, but could be the next 2 or 3 years. It's going to be really fascinating, because no matter what road they take, there's going to be some trade-offs that teams are going to have to live with. And the Sixers are certainly right up there with those teams that will.
They absolutely are. And it's a great point to bring up with the moving of the luxury tax and that changing the bill. And then the other part of that equation that's worth discussing, I don't know it specifically for the ownership group, but remember that various teams, the people who run them, are their capacity to spend and their willingness to spend due to their personal wealth, is going to shift too.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the Sixers owners are doing really, really well for themselves. I don't know how much the, you know, current financial situation has impacted that, but we're talking about, like, Josh Harris, I think, was worth like $4 billion. They have others who were worth $2 to $3 billion. Like, I assume they're going to be okay. I don't know how much of that is liquid. Like, there's a whole lot of conversations there. But it's more like, it's more appetite, I think, is the right way that you phrased it. You know, because these are guys who are probably going to not be in as strong of a financial position as they were a couple months ago. And you have a league that's going to get more costly real quickly. And yeah, I mean, there's human behavior. Billionaires, by and large, I think probably like money. And it will be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Plenty more to talk about with Derek Bodner, but first a message from BetOnline. You might be thinking that there's nothing to bet on since there's currently no NBA, Major League Baseball, or NHL going on, but you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they're bringing the Vegas to you. And you should check it out, and if you start a new account, use the promo code PODCAST1, not only to tell them that you came from us, but to get a special sign-up bonus. If you are missing the NFL, no problem. BetOnline has daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can bet on. And if you're into entertainment betting, you could still bet on American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All of this is open 24 hours a day and all online. So visit the website or use your mobile device and join today using the PODCAST1 promo code for your new welcome bonus at BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Something else I wanted to discuss with you at least a little bit was going through some kind of like progress reports. I mean, I kind of just also wanted to get back into basketball a little bit. I was excited because I know you know this team so well. And something that Nate and I got into when we were discussing, so we did this battle plan series, which was focused more on young cores and everything like that. And he asked me an interesting question that I hadn't really considered before it, which was Josh Richardson, you know, when the Sixers acquired him, it was part of why they were able to get him is that he is, after next season, so not right now, going to be have this really low-cost player option that he is almost certainly going to decline, even in the way things are, to become an unrestricted free agent. And so the question that Nate asked me was, is it possible that the kind of the end game here, if Richardson either doesn't want to come back or, you know, because his own volition is an unrestricted free agent, or it's just not worth the money for whatever reason, will Matisse Thybulle be ready to take over that spot of basically being a guard, starter, important defensive player, and then have a role within the offense? And I was a little bit surprised by it, and then realized that seems like it almost definitely has to be what they're hoping for.
Yeah, I think it's what they're hoping for. Now, whether he will make that kind of leap in the next year and a half, I'm not sure. You know, Matisse is really about as unique of a young player as you'll find. His defense, at times undisciplined, but usually has a pretty good impact. Like the plays that he makes, the disruptive plays that he makes, is pretty close to a league by itself. He's not a pure one-on-one defender. He will get beaten. He will get blown by. But the way he is able to make plays off ball, make plays on ball, with his length, his activity, his anticipation, it's really fun to watch. And you put him and Simmons alongside of each other, and that's a team that can force steals at a real elite level. His offense is, to say a work in progress would be putting it mildly. You know, he had one stretch, I want to say like a 14-game stretch in the middle of the season where he shot like 50-some percent from three, and it was looking really good. But if you look at the before and after of that, you know, I think over the last like 20 games or so, he's shooting like 24% from three. And in the first however many games, he was shooting in the low 30s. So it's been real hot and cold with one huge hot streak and the rest a pretty dry spell. And that's concerning because that's really just about all that he does offensively. Like, he'll make some cuts off the ball, some lobs. But I watched recently, I went through Synergy and I looked at every basket he's made. He's made seven shots all year, I think, where you can really say he beat his man off the dribble. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a player who's played like 1,100 minutes a season. Seven shots all year where he's really beaten, like gotten past a guy off the dribble. And he just does not have confidence in those handles. I mean, doesn't have confidence because the handles aren't good, for NBA good at least, to dribble in traffic. Like, that's just not an element of his game that he does. So he doesn't have a shot right now where he's really getting hard contests and getting guys off balance. So he doesn't really have an easy driving lane almost ever. His shot is super streaky. So if it's not in transition or it's not a cut, you're really playing 4-on-5 a lot. And on a team that starts, like I said, a post-up big and a non-shooting point guard, that's tough to really take another position off the floor. Now, he continues to get minutes because his defense is just that excellent. But in order to make that step, I mean, we talk about Josh Richardson, and I think most years Josh is like in the 37 or 38% range off the catch from three. This year he's down, I think, probably like 34%. But those look like Ray Allen numbers when you start looking at what Matisse Thybulle doesn't do on offense. So there's definitely a step that needs to happen. Look, I'm not ever going to expect him to create off the dribble at a way even like Josh Richardson does. And Josh certainly isn't elite at that, but he at least has a pull-up game where when he gets going, he can, you know, you can at least impact the game that way. I don't expect Matisse to ever have that, but you hope that he has that a more consistent catch and shoot and a dribble drive game where he can at least attack a closeout and look competent doing so. And right now there's still some progress that needs to be made there.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of my favorite kind of ridiculous stats with Thybulle, and I think he has a lot of room to grow, and I'm tantalized by what he could theoretically be, is he was assisted on every single one of his three-pointers this season.
Yeah.
100%. Like
He's not dribbling off of a screen and pulling up.
You could see 90%, you could see 95%, but you don't see many true 100% for somebody who, you know, that's really, as you said, that's like what he does offensively.
Yeah, and look, he's really great kid, smart kid, hard worker, has so much defensively that you love to watch. And I think not only love to watch, but like he makes a real impact on that end. So you hope that he figures it out, because if he does, I mean, he doesn't need much to be a long-term NBA player that can fill a role on a good team. But I think there does need to be some growth, and that will be key, you know, on whether or not he can grow into that starter role.
Right. And another reason why it's such a high leverage situation for the Sixers is that even if we're throwing the luxury tax element of this out, they just don't have that many other ways to get a theoretical fifth starter. You know, the internal improvement. So they have a lot of money tied up in four players: Embiid, Simmons, Harris, and Horford, all of whom are signed for at least two seasons beyond this year. Most of whom are signed for significantly longer than that. Harris,
yes.
Harris 4 years, Simmons 5, Embiid 3, I believe. Yep. But so that means they're not going to be a cap space team. And they, you know, theoretically they could trade one of those for somebody, but then you're trading a starter for a starter. It's hard to do a two for one in that respect. But then they just, Zaire Smith would be challenging for me to imagine him in that role. And then, you know, the Sixers are picking late in the first round if they're even going to have those picks. And then the taxpayer mid-level or a minimum salary it's incredible to get a starter for that. I mean, that would be one of the best mid-level contracts ever signed.
Yeah, and I think the hope there, the only other real young player they have in the pipeline, you know, Zaire at this point is, you know, a project, a long shot. Shake Milton, I think, has made a lot of progress here this year.
Yeah,
over the last 20 games, he was averaging like 13 and shooting like over 50% from the field. He had a real, like his when he came out, the knock was athleticism, and he still doesn't quite have that kind of burst, but he's played really well. And I think he's the other guy that you look at and say, you know, if you need someone to grow, it's got to be either Matisse or Shake. To do that, they have two options. They've done pretty well here in the late first and second round over the last few years. Traded one of them away in Landry Shamet in the Tobias Harris trade. But they've had a couple of decent hits here. And you hope that now you had the scouting success, and now you need the player development to take that to the next level.
Right. And honestly, you probably need both Milton and Thybulle to succeed, because the other one's going to need to play a significant role in the rotation too.
Yeah. And like you said, you need cheap. Like there just aren't that many ways to add real legitimate starter or six man quality talent to this roster. They are pretty inflexible, and you look at it, and if you want to get rid of one of these contracts, you might end up having to attach some of these assets anyway. So you like that puts a real premium on the ones that you do have. Like there's a lot of young players who show promise. There's a lot few of them who develop into 25 to 30 minute per game kind of players. You need one or two of them to make that next step for sure.
Yeah, and the Sixers at the deadline, I think they had the good fortune of dealing with a desperate Warriors team to get Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks. We don't know what kind of fruit that's going to bear at all, but that can't be seen as the kind of the standard or the expectation to be able to get two players that could theoretically be a part of your rotation for piddling second round picks.
Yeah. Yep.
Another couple of decisions. I mean, we don't know if we're going to get more basketball to evaluate it. Players kind of on the fringes of the rotation. We could talk about the main guys too, a little bit, but Furkan Korkmaz, interestingly, got that, you know, got the rookie scale option declined and then re-signed with Sixers. He has a non-guarantee for next season. And then Norvell Pell was a two-way player who then got converted to a full contract as a non-guarantee for next year. Knowing what we know right now, what would your feel be on both whether they're going to be on the team next year, and I think in Korkmaz's case he probably will be, and then where they fit in to all this?
Yeah, I think Korkmaz will be. You know, it is just so tough to get shooting and real quality shooting. And look, Korkmaz has, like, there's just not an all-around aspect to his game. But he's the one guy on the roster that can really, you know, shoot off the move, come off of a dribble handoff, come off of a screen, and be a threat and be somebody that the defense has to at least account for when he's doing that. And on a team with Embiid, you know, I think Embiid really thrives off that. We saw that a lot with J.J. Redick. They lost that. Not in any way saying Korkmaz is J.J. Redick, but he's the only real facsimile of him that they have. And they were able to, later in the year, which feels like an eternity ago, bust out some of the plays that Embiid would like to go to with Redick and run that with Korkmaz. So I think, you know, he is a legit shooter. You know, his first 2 years in the NBA, he was sort of like that shooter who couldn't make shots. And you looked at him, you said, all right, that shot looks good. He made it when he was over in Europe. He made it with Efes, but it hasn't been going in yet. And this year, the dam kind of broke. I think he's shooting, I forget exactly what he's shooting, but up around 40% from three. And that's made him a playable NBA player. What does that mean? You know, ninth man, 15 minutes per game. Yeah, I don't want to go too much more because I'm not sure he's playable because of his defense in the playoffs. But I think he's got a spot on a roster. Whereas at this time last year, I wasn't quite so certain about that. So I think he will be back in part because he is playable and in part because he is cheap. And those are two things that the Sixers very desperately need.
Yeah. Let's just talk about Korkmaz. I agree with you on that. I looked it up. So he made 40% of his threes, took 11 per 100 possessions. And what's incredible about Korkmaz, he's, I think, probably one of the only players in NBA history, though it was a small sample size his rookie year, to shoot over 10 threes per 100 possessions every single year of his career. He's 10.2, 10, and 11. But obviously his success changed dramatically from that rough early going to making a lot of them this year.
Yeah, and that was something I was always pretty confident would follow. Like, his form was always pure. They spent a little bit of time when he first got here in his rookie year shortening up his shooting motion. He worked a little bit on that Klay Thompson no dip shot to add that to his repertoire, and it just felt like, given enough NBA reps, those shots were going to start going in, and they have, and I'm confident they will. And because of that, I think he will be on an NBA roster, so why not be on a team that has no cap space to add anyone? Norvell Pell is, you know, he's fun. He blocks shots with reckless abandon, or chases shots with reckless abandon. He's sometimes fun when he's running to the rim. He's not actually a good defender right now. He's out of position a lot. He fouls a lot, and not that fouling is that big of a deal, but it's more a symptom of being out of position. He needs a lot of work to, I think, really grasp rotations and what he can and can't do on a basketball court. He is energetic. He is, you know, he does give effort, but I think, you know, him, I think, is a lot. You can certainly upgrade your third center spot from Norvell Pell on a pretty cheap deal. So I have less confidence he'll be around even next season.
Well, and also, if you have a third center that you don't feel super confident is going to be a second or eventually a first, paying them, you know, the minimum or even a little bit more than that, it's just unnecessary. You know, like, there are so many players that are available, and you can check one of two boxes. You can either check the they're better right now or the maybe they'll be better later on.
Right, because Norvell Pell is like 26, I want to say. He's not young.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and maybe, you know, if you invite him to camp or something like that, that you could, that sort of situation. But yeah, I wouldn't guarantee it. I'll put it that way.
Yes.
I was thinking about Tobias Harris today when we were going to have this conversation, and other than, you know, his 3-point shot could have gone in more than it has, and that's a fair thing to make. That, for me, his season was both pretty much what I expected, but also disappointing because of the reminder that he's on a max contract.
Right.
Does that seem fair?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, and right when he signed that contract, you knew it was going to be an overpay. But the hope was that, you know, he had grown early on in his career. You hope that he had a few more steps to, not that he was ever going to be that max player, but that he would at least come closer to it. And I think this year, for the most part, he has been who Tobias Harris has been. And that's both the good and the bad. Like, I think his overall game, his overall style has pretty much been what it was in his recent years. It's just early and all in the season, that shot wasn't going in from the perimeter. And in the second half of the season, it started going in more. He's played some good ball. You know, but he's not going to get the free throw line. He's not going to get the rim. He's not really going to set up his teammates all that much. And I think he's taken a minor step defensively, but that means going from like below average to like only slightly below average, or maybe average if you squint hard enough. So he's not really like, there's, you know, his, he doesn't have the burst or the handle or the creativity to really get all the way to the rim. He settles for a lot of those mid-range shots, which he makes at a high clip, but they're, you know, they're inefficient for a reason. His passes are pretty basic dump off passes. There's just, and he, if he was your, let's say your fourth best player, your fourth option, really, he would fit a really nice role. But because the Sixers are so lacking in perimeter shot creation and so lacking in a player who can break down the defense in the half court, and a player who has vision, you know, you have players like Ben Simmons who has that vision, but because of his shooting deficiencies, he's not really going to create off of a pick and roll that much. You just need, you need an archetype that Tobias Harris really isn't and never has been. So because of that, you're a little bit disappointed that he didn't take that next step, even if maybe at his age, you know, what, 27 or what have you, it was maybe unrealistic to expect too much improvement beyond what he has. But yeah, between the contract and the role that he's asked to play, I think it is both what you expected and also a disappointment. I think it's fair.
And really, that all stems back to what I would say, you know, not the original sin of the organization. You and I have over the years had plenty of conversations about those sorts of things. But the Sixers gave up so much for Tobias Harris, and it always seemed to me like they misread how important he could be on this team, and like that he was the, they traded away the stuff like he's the clear, perfect final piece when he was an imperfect, at best, final piece.
Yeah.
And that ripple effect, I mean, so there are a couple different ways to think about it. One for me was that the Sixers were willing to give him a full max contract. More power to him if that's the way they were going to feel. I disagreed with it then. But it seems like the Clippers, I mean, weren't super enthusiastic about that, and then especially when you consider the ripple effects of what they ended up doing in the summer of 2019, they definitely wouldn't have preferred giving Tobias Harris a max contract over everything that ended up transpiring. But so the other part of that is, so yes, they did have Tobias Harris for the 2019 playoffs, and they, you know, did come very close to knocking off the eventual NBA champions. But you could kind of go in two directions. So one of them is, he isn't that guy. And if they were willing to give him a max contract, yeah, they would have lost out a little bit because his contract ended up being, was significantly more than his cap hold. And so there was some flexibility created there, which ended up going to Al Horford. But then the other part of it is, if you're willing to give him a max contract and it's unclear whether his current team is going to, all of the things that they gave up to get him would be so useful on their team right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, look, Landry Shamet, as imperfect as he is, like, you need, we just talked about Furkan Korkmaz being playable because of that two-man game he could have with Embiid. Landry Shamet's a much better version of that. You talk about the draft picks, and this is a team now that went from having so many assets and so much flexibility and so many different ways to get really what you wanted to be, that third star, that you've just wasted too many of them. Like, you gave up too many assets for Tobias Harris to then overpay for, to have the right to overpay for Tobias Harris. And you combine that with maybe some other decisions like the Markel trade, which is so weird, but it basically tied up three draft picks that at the time were extremely high valued across the league. And the combination of those two trades, and you just don't, like, you are now at a point where you are completely inflexible. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know what other ways to say it. Like, he is not good enough for either that trade or that contract. And that's, you know, I like Tobias Harris. I think he's a useful piece, but you're right. They treated him both in the acquisition and in the contract like he was that can't miss third star that would make them a dynasty. And he's nowhere near that.
Right. And it's always hard for me to get part of my era. Part of it's just easy because it's, you know, passionate about GM stuff and everything like that. But the other part of, if it's a player I like, but you overpay for a player I like, it's just harder than if it's, you know, like Andrew Wiggins.
Right.
Like, okay.
Right.
And that was just so blatantly wrong. And then you can go in that direction. With Tobias Harris, it's just like, okay, the theory on it was, it wasn't great, but it wasn't abysmal. And there are certain boxes that Tobias Harris checked that are really hard to check, you know, forward sized guy who has a jump shot that other teams have to respect and can do a little bit with the ball in his hands. That isn't a large group of people. And then if you're narrowing that down to acquirable, whether through free agency or trade, players who can do all that, then it's a really small list. But it was what the volume that they gave up, giving up picks, giving up Shamet, that was really challenging there. They did get back other things that were useful, ended up being useful in the 2019 playoffs, Mike Scott notably among them. But Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I just can't shake. And, you know, we brought up the idea of if Josh Richardson is no longer a Sixer after the 20/21 season, they're going to be in that desperate situation. I'm not saying Shamet would have been the obvious pick or that he was going to develop into that player or anything like that, but it would have been nice to have another possibility.
Yeah, sure. And like there's I think where this is really going to start to become an issue with this team is if they do start, like if they start feeling the crunch of that luxury tax, whether that changes or even just what it was eventually going to become, and you start losing, you know, let's say you lose Josh Richardson because you're not going to pay him that next contract because you have Al Horford and Tobias Harris on your roster, or you have to pay, you know, let's say you have to include Matisse Thybulle to get rid of Al Horford so you can then pay Josh Harris and keep him, or Josh Richardson and keep him around long term. Josh Harris, he's the one who would be paying. But let's say you have to lose an asset to get rid of Al Horford. So now you, not only did that Tobias Harris trade lose you those draft picks and Landry Shamet, but because his contract is so high and so exorbitant, then you have to trade assets to keep somebody who you want and Josh Richardson around long term. And there's just a snowball effect of those assets you lost, inflexibility, more assets you're going to have to get rid of so that you can improve your cap situation and your tax situation. And there's just, I think they really got scared off by what happened with Markel. And I think they really thought he was going to be that third star.
Yeah.
And then B, what happened in free agency when they got spurned by LeBron and Paul George and all those guys that they wanted to sign and couldn't even get real meetings with. And they went, all right, well, we have Ben Simmons. His extension is going to kick in. Last summer was really last summer. They're going to have cap space. We want to start getting some certainty around Embiid and Simmons. Let's just take the deal that we have now, even if we have to overpay, get some certainty, get something locked in so we know what we have to pursue next summer or last summer with cap space. And it just, that's not the strongest position to be dealing from. And I think it led to a lot of mistakes. And also you had a rookie GM who had like a year and a half of experience in the G League, and that's all of his front office resume, and some turmoil in the front office with what happened with Colangelo and the plans that he might have had. And it's just a really weird couple of years, decade.
Yeah. Agreed. And the Fultz thing, that's something Nate and I actually talked about. We did a What If podcast recently, and that the theory of Marco Fultz, and you and I were so excited about like how that was going to fit in, and just due to things that none of us could have ever predicted ended up just totally not materializing. And it was also, for me, it was an appreciation of just how hard it is, even though the player, the guard position player that the Sixers need with those guys isn't as hard to find as the forward that they envisioned Tobias Harris to be, it is still a really hard nut to crack when you have limited resources, and that's a part of why it was just such a big hit for them.
Yeah, and look, and like I said with the draft picks, like they traded the number three pick in that draft, and then they, crazy protections, but basically the Lakers pick next year or the Kings pick in 2019. And think of where the Lakers were. Like, the reason they still had that Lakers pick is because it kept falling in the top five and wouldn't convey year after. I think it didn't convey like two or three straight years. Yeah. So that was really a really valued pick around the league at the time. And the Kings, I mean, the Kings were the Kings. And it ended up happening that they improved slightly in the 1 year when it wound up conveying. But those three picks were essentially tied up because you had to wait for the Lakers pick conveyance to figure out in 2018 before you could. But so basically you had those three assets, and those were real trade assets. So it's not only just the Markel trade, but it's the opportunity cost of every other trade you could have gotten into between then and there. And it has not worked. And Markel is such a weird situation. And I don't think that was a scouting miss as much as it was, you know, we can get into a debate whether you could predict what would have happened, or that was a background check miss, or it's just completely random and fluky and you never could have predicted. Either way, it left them in a spot where they, you know, they were scrambling a little bit, I think.
Right. I hadn't thought about the idea of the opportunity cost of those picks could have become other things, like whether they would have drafted a player themselves. You know, maybe they use that Sacramento pick or use it in a different trade for somebody else that just expands the war chest. That's a really, really good point. And I mean, as things turned out, and I think it would have been hard to predict however it happened, was that for the Sixers specific purposes, other than maybe Josh Jackson,
everyone would have been better.
Yeah, I mean, like, so if they had, you know, Tatum, sure, certainly, yeah, that would have worked out incredibly well. Who knows? Maybe he would have been off the board. Maybe Danny Ainge would have bet on his own board and taken him anyway. Or, I mean, they could have taken, you know, De'Aaron Fox. Like, he would have been imperfect, but at least, like, the idea sort of like a talented guard. Like they're it's just so crazy how the thought experiment of Markelle Fultz there, you know, like it was a lot to give up, but there was some merit there. And then it just to have it blow up the way that it did is just it's I'm thankful that it didn't cripple the franchise because they have so much other strength there, but it is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean Markelle should send Joel and Ben a gift basket because if not, he would receive a lot more. I think there would be a lot more consternation about that pick in Philadelphia.
Yeah, more Sam Bowie Venom style.
Right, right. And whether that's deserved or not. Yeah, right. But because, I mean, Darko lucked out in that regard too. But because, I mean, the future is so strong, they're still a contender. It's just that was, like, if you're talking about patient, I think Zach Lois said this, when you're talking about patient zero of when this really became weird, he's where they sort of went off track from having that that potential dynasty.
I don't necessarily want to dwell on this unless you want to, in which case,
No,
topic. Okay. But the other kind of thing that Nate and I got into a little bit that I wanted to ask you about was now we're, you know, a few years in, the players are still developing. Let's ignore the specific context of the surrounding talent. What is your evaluation of the Embiid-Simmons pairing if we're talking about being the two best players on a championship team?
I'm still optimistic about what they can be. You know, I think right now Simmons it's obviously a tricky fit, but I think his weaknesses become exacerbated because they don't have that Markelle Fultz like guard who can really create in the half court. Like, I think they clearly wanted to pair him with a pick and roll ball handler, a lead guard like that. And that's why they pursued Markelle the way that they did. Since that point, they've sort of backed off of that and done a complete 180. And now you've got, you know, I mean, now you've got all post-up guys who want to use their height and their size to their advantage, which is a weird mix. But they, you know, they pivoted and went more like a defensive approach, made Ben the lead ball handler. And I think because of that, his offensive weaknesses have become even more pronounced. I think Ben showed a lot as sort of like a short roller, like sort of like a super Blake Griffin type where he can use his passing to pick teams apart when he gets them in rotations. I think, I mean, they were having great success doing that with Shake Milton and, you know, Howell Neto. And like, if you get a real guard like that, a real guy who comes off of a corner and you have to account for them and can suck in a defense or shoot out coming off of a screen, hit a step back. Like, I think Ben can become real interesting as a role man. I think his shot has made improvement, and that's stupid to talk about when he won't do it in a game. And there's a psychological aspect that we're going to have to deal with and confront at some point on whether or not he has the confidence in it and whether he can overcome that fear of failure and sort of rip off that Band-Aid that he's never taken real meaningful shots in games. But I do think there, like, if you're asking me whether or not he can develop the skill set to just make a catch and shoot shot with 10 feet of space between him and the defender, I am more confident now than I was a year ago or 2 years ago, but I'm less confident that he will get to the point where he can confidently do that in a game consistently.
Yeah. The kind of the can versus will.
Right. So there's a weird sort of dynamic there where I don't know if I'm confident or not, but I think there are ways, like I think the way that they were growing Simmons off ball towards the end of the season or the end of play was intriguing, especially if you get the right personnel around him. You know, this team is so weird and the spacing is so jacked up. And I think that gets thrown a lot on Embiid and Simmons. And look, partly it is. Like, when your point guard or your lead ball handler, whatever you want to call him, can't shoot and won't shoot, that's tough to overcome. But then you've got, you know, Al Horford, who isn't comfortable shooting 6 3-pointers a game and wants to post up when he has mismatches and wants to operate in sort of like that mid area and run a lot of pick and pop. And they just don't have, like, there's a lot of players who are playing, and you've got Tobias Harris, who wants to get in that pull up range. Like, I think this team is just, it's not built to sort of capitalize on their strengths and minimize their weaknesses. And I think that, and look, it's when you're talking about a championship team, like, the margin for error there is so small anyway. So it's going to be tough. Like, the fit around them has to be perfect. But I think they both have the potential to do it in the right circumstance. And that in the right circumstance is key. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that. Like, when did Dirk win his championship? Like, his 13th year in the league or something like that? Like, it doesn't always come. Even Steph and the Splash Brothers, like, I think that was Steph's, like, 6th year or something like that playing. It is tough to get the right supporting cast. I think they're nowhere near having the right supporting cast around them now. So, yeah, I think there's still hope, but they are unique. Their strengths and weaknesses are different. you're not going to be able to play the same style that a lot of the league wants to play. But I think I'm still a believer in betting on talent, and I think they have a lot of talent. And the way that they've grown defensively, I think, is worth mentioning in this conversation, too.
I'm broadly on board with you, and I'm glad that you brought up defense, because that's where I was going to start, is that Embiid, I still think that he has defensive player of the year potential. Now, the offensive workload he has and everything else, we haven't seen him all the way there yet, but I mean, he's 25. There's still plenty of potential there. And Simmons, I think the most underrated thing about Simmons, and for some reason this just gets taken for granted because he started out doing well, is that his defensive versatility. I mean, there aren't many players in the league who you feel comfortable defending 1 through 4 on good players. There are some who's like, oh, you know, you can kind of dump them on whoever and they'll do okay. But Simmons can do well. Like, he can thrive on a lot of different players. And so that's why I think they're viable, is that, you know, a team builder, general manager, knows you have to fulfill some very specific things. And they're hard to do, to be sure. Like, you want somebody who can handle the ball but doesn't need the ball all the time. And everybody needs to be able to shoot. And ideally, you have some versatility defensively so you can take advantage of some of the things that Simmons does and other guys. But what you gain is that the height of those other players matters a lot less. And that is such a rare gift. And sure, you know, generally speaking, the taller, the better, and all these other things. And that was the part of it that was always a little bit tougher, you know, partially the Tobias Harris thing and a couple other ones, is that not everybody has to be 6'8 to make this work. It helps, but it's not required. And I mean, like, there's always space for a Josh Richardson or a, you know, even a Landry Shamet, not perfect, but, you know, you can get in there. And also, when you have a foundation defensively that's as strong as those two guys are, then you can start to tolerate imperfect defensive players to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're looking to build a world-class defense, look, the Sixers, I forget where they are. They might be like 6th or 7th in the league defensively. They haven't been world-class all year, although I think when Embiid's on the court, they are. I think when their starting five has been on the court, or at least 4 of the 5, because they've changed that 5th starter now, they have been. But, you know, Embiid's not locked in every game like he will be, hopefully, in the playoffs.
Right.
But if you were going to build a world-class defense, you would start with an elite rim protector big and a switchable forward. And the Sixers have 2 of the best versions of that in the league. So I think you're right. You can take some hits at some of the other players to get pieces who really complement and fill in the gaps of what they can't do. And the Sixers just went in the complete opposite direction of that. And I mean, look, it's like I said, when all 5, and the Sixers have not been healthy for most of the year. I think their starting lineup has played like 19 games where all 5 of those, the original starting 5, have been together. You had Embiid out, then you had Richardson out, then you had Simmons out, then you had Embiid out again. Like, it's been real tough in that regard. The defense has been there, but I think they just went too far. And, like, you just need a couple more players who can shoot and dribble and pass. And I think this becomes a lot easier to sort of see that progression towards a team that can compete at the highest level.
Yeah, I think we're in pretty firm agreement there.
Now, how you get those players? Like, I talked about having a third, real good creator on the perimeter. How you get that guy, I have no idea,
because their trade assets this point,
are not but yes,
well, and not only is it trade assets, but players on positive value contracts, you know. So Horford not on a positive value contract right now. I mean, he's making basically $27 million a year after this season for another 2 and then that partial guarantee. And then Tobias Harris is on a max contract that's going to be really hard to move. If you want to keep Embiid and Simmons, then we're not talking about them. And then it becomes, you know, Josh Richardson. And Josh Richardson, something that Miami could have dealt with in a different circumstance, and not really being a part of the Jimmy Butler stuff, is it's actually genuinely hard to trade a player who is underpaid, because everybody who is similarly good makes more money.
Yeah, and not only that, but now he's basically a year away from being a free agent. And again, this isn't a time. It'll be interesting to see. You know, I think one of the things that was mentioned in the Bobby Marks article was that there might, if things stay the way they are, and nobody really expects them to stay the way they are, but there would be 3 teams with cap space. So obviously they're gonna change some things up on how this is all calculated. There will be more than that, but we might not be flush with cap space. So, you know, what does that mean for Josh Richardson? What does that mean for his next contract? There's going to be a lot of calculations in here where this isn't going to be just a, he's going to be an expiring contract, and how does the league value that? That'll be interesting to watch. But yeah, you expect he will get a decent raise. So the fact that he is on an expiring deal and expected to get a much bigger deal going forward, you know, it is, he will have less value now than when the Sixers traded for him a year ago, you would expect.
Right, even though it's not like he had a bad year or anything like that. It's just because now there's less toothpaste in the tube, let's put it that way, while he's still on this team-friendly contract. And it was reasonable for him when he signed it. Got life-changing money ahead of time from the Heat, and I think it worked out well for both sides, as some contracts do. It actually doesn't happen that often. And with Richardson, the selling point to me for another team, should the Sixers be willing to trade him, is bird rights. Because right. There will be teams, even though the summer of 2021, people are going to be flush. Also, his cap hold isn't going to be crazy high, depending on kind of where the estimated average player salary is, which is one of these nerdy questions that is going to have to get answered at some point in the future. His hold won't necessarily be ridiculous, but what you're looking for, and this is the same thing that I thought was going to happen with Danilo Gallinari, and then it didn't, because partially OKC did well, and partially just no teams were really in that right space, even though we couldn't have seen what happened coming, is, okay, this is kind of like, in a way, what happened with Tobias Harris, is we might not have the ability to get somebody better, but we'll have the capacity to pay him, so as long as, hopefully we can get him at a reasonable rate. And that if a team really does value that, then Richardson, they can't be sure that he's going to stay. And even if he were to make indications that he were willing to resign, he's not, like, Richardson and his agent are not going to say, oh, I'm 100% resigning here, doesn't matter what you offer me or anything like that. But it is a part of the sales pitch if that would be a way to retain him that they wouldn't have another way.
Right. Yep, for sure.
Anything else you want to discuss? Sixers, NBA, whatever?
I mean, I can just say the one thing I'm really hoping for that comes out of all this is an amnesty. Only because, not only because the Sixers have a couple contracts who'd want amnesty, but also because the Sixers used their amnesty back in 2011 or after the 2011 CBA on Elton Brand. And then Elton Brand would use the new amnesty on a player that he signed. And both amnesties in Sixers history would be related to Elton Brand. That would just be a delicious story, and I hope that plays out.
Yeah, and it will be really fascinating to see. I mean, you have the parties negotiated certain things deliberately in what's called the 2017 CBA with no knowledge of what was going to come, because how could they? And whether they recalculate the luxury tax or add an amnesty provision, or there are a lot of things that could be considered that normally would be within the realms of only full CBA negotiations, but we're in such uncharted waters. I will be interested to see how that comes into play.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of different ways they could sort of resolve this weird cap situation and the drop in BRI. Amnesty is only one of them, but just because of, like I said, the historical tie-in with Elton Brand, I hope that comes to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Thanks again to Derek Bodner for taking the time to come on. You can, of course, read his work at The Athletic, The Athletic's Philadelphia, if you want to be specific, but really, you could see it anywhere on the site. And you can follow Derek on Twitter at Derek Bodner NBA, DerekBodner NBA. Love having him on and love getting his perspective on what is a fascinating, unusual situation with the Sixers. That's why I wanted to have him on specifically. If you want to support the show, there are a lot of ways you can do it. You can subscribe and download every episode. That's extremely important because this show doesn't come out on a specific day of the week. There isn't a pattern that you can get into. So subscribing means that it will pop into your podcast player whenever it's there. You can also spread word of mouth, single episode, or the show in general. If there are people you think would enjoy it, let them know. Show's been around a while, but that doesn't mean everyone knows about it. And also leaving a review in the podcast player of your choosing. Really important to help other people find the show. Great if it's Apple Podcasts. Understand if it's not. And we're on Spotify now, so you can check us out there. That's for subscribing and for really anything. And the most important thing for this show and any other that has to know is to check out our sponsors for this episode. That is BetOnline. Use the Podcast One promo code for your special sign-up bonus. Also tells them that you came from us. Real GM Radio will continue going strong one time a week, as long as they let me do it. And as of right now, they are. And it's been a real blast to do this. And I already actually have next week's guest lined up. But as is standard protocol, I will not say anything until the episode is recorded, and that will be hopefully early next week. Really excited, though, about what's coming up. You can also check out my work, Audio, Dunked On. We are still doing a lot of work right now. I just did a listener-suggested series on what-if players, so players that had their career is sidetracked due to injuries or other things, you know, could be tragic passing or other demons. And so was, you know, what careers changed the most because of that. And some of them also wasn't as much necessarily about the player, but about how that affected the league, including for Sixers fans. I had a little riff on Markel Fultz and how he fit in with the Sixers so much better than the other players they've tried in that spot. Though not a ton of other real Sixers on the list, but plenty of other people. And it was you know, at times it was depressing, but at other times it was, you know, appreciating the positive. So you can get that there. Also, plenty of writing at The Athletic. Just did a Q&A. I've done Q&As in the last couple of days with a focus on the Hawks and the Knicks. Actually, still have a second part of the Knicks one coming out, and then the Rockets. And then I have my own solo piece. And I did a Hear the Deer podcast on The Athletic with Eric Nehm, talking about the collaborative piece that we did on a potential Giannis Supermax extension. And I'm working on a follow-up piece, separate one, about the consequences, the unintended consequences of that. So that should be out. I'm hoping Friday, might end up being Monday, at The Athletic. If you have any feedback on this show, or honestly anything else I do, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com is the way to get that to me. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. That is a promise. I will get back to you if I can. I actually am still crazy busy in all this time, which I'm very thankful for. But again, I don't promise to respond. I just promise to read it. So that's really what the deal is there. Real GM Radio, as I said, will be back next week. I already have the guest lined up, and hope you all are taking care of yourselves, taking care of each other physically, mentally, emotionally. This is a lot, I know, for everybody to take, and hopefully this can make it at least a little bit better for you and yours. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.